Bildungsentwicklung Tanz, ein Forschungsprojekt, konzipiert, gestaltet und realisiert von Paul Vosser. Heute mit
Gilda Rebello. Hello, today we are with Gilda Rebello. Gilda is a multidisciplinary artist and teacher. Highlight of her career were the Folkwang Tanz Studio and the Tanztheater Wuppertal as a guest under the direction of Pina Bausch. Until 2009, she performed as a soloist at the Theater Dortmund. In 2015, she was training director at the Braunschweig Theater Dance Company. She studied dance, music and acting in Rio, with further education at Folkwang University and the Hochschule für Musik und Darstellerkunst Frankfurt am Main, HFMDK in Frankfurt. In 2021-22, she conducted two research projects on the effects of digitalization on art and published music albums under the pseudonym Rebel Log. Among others, the album Motoric Poetry Project, Non-Visual Induced Dance, consisting of original musical composition with voiceovers. She took part in this year's Festival Politics in Freie Theater 2022 in Frankfurt with a small project for young people. Hello, Gilda.
Hi, Paolo. Hi, dear. Carissimo.
Welcome. So, first of all, would you like to add or correct any things about your very short bio?
Perfect.
Great. Right. I only remind this is a very short biography that I read, that there will be a longer one on your page for the podcast.
Right. Thank
you. First of all, thank you very much for agreeing to do this interview for my platform Bildung Entwicklung Tanz, Educational Development Dance. And of course, thank you so much for your precious time. So I will start immediately with my first question. How does education relate to dance for you?
Yeah, Paolo, caro. Yes, a fairly open question. And it's nice because the interview people can actually choose, you know, the direction they take more, the critical points they want to exploit.
Absolutely.
It's a beautiful initiative of yours. It's more than urgent to rethink, to reflect on how we are dealing with education related to dance. So thank you for making us think again. And back to the question. So, of course, I'll answer related more to the scene we live in, which is Germany, Europe, Western world, right? And it'd be different if I was talking about Brazil. And I'll speak mainly about education as in basic education, education to everybody. In normal schools, as opposed to exclusive education for future dancers. Yeah. So mainly education as in normal education, as in basic, not normal, basic education, and dance as a social, physical activity. And then it's only fair that I go to my perception of it, but also with critical points. Training dancers for concert dance activities has the stage as a main goal, right? A performance space. This is what I define as a concert dance, a dance that will end up on stage or some kind of venue, whatever the stage is. And most of the time lately in projects that I'm invited also to take part on, many of these projects in schools where dance is being used as an extracurricular activity, they also have the stage as a main goal, performance, to develop performance. And I think this is highly questionable, I must say. The main reason I think dance doesn't play a bigger role in education is because now everything needs to end up to somehow performing. And stage dance often gets privileged over dance as a social activity, a physical social activity. Don't get me wrong. I know there are amazing people out there doing very concrete, very consistent pedagogical work. And a great number of colleagues I know are doing great work. And I myself like also to choreograph, you know, in style, rhythm is it, a lot of tune and this is fun. But lately, also post-corona related, my experience tells me that the society we're living in could profit more from activities without any connection to performing, to have to prove anything, you know? And so would dance have a deeper connection, in my opinion, in my view, to education. And this I'm telling all ages, all backgrounds, mixed able, name it. I have an example here. Take contact improvisation class sessions, for example, which I find it great because the jamming itself, it's ultimate goal, right? It lives and it dies there. It's a unique embodied experience, which most of the times you cannot even word up. You cannot describe. What you live there will barely be repeated or rehearsed in terms of like having the same sequence of steps and dramaturgy, right? So it's a unique experience, and a lot of theater or stage projects end up diminishing this experience, so end up producing more anxiety in a society that is already producing anxiety by the minute. I find that education using dance could profit so much to make students have less stress. Sometimes what I see as a result of many projects using stage as the ultimate goal is kids losing interest in art as part of culture because it produces more pressure, right? You know better than me that how many benefits dance can have in education, right? Just to name a few. It can enhance learning, it connects brain synapses, it will facilitate creativity, will facilitate endorphins freeing and balancing out emotion. That's just like, you know, a lot of features and properties that dance that would help out to enhance education in schools. But I see this capacity being a bit flattened. And then to connect to my research, many of these performances get filmed. They get posted. They produce more anxiety, more who's in front of who is thinner, who is virtuosistic. And it kills, to me, the experience that we can have when just simply dancing for the sake of dancing. There's the potential of dance gets lately a bit lost. I think also emotional, physical aspects get a bit lost. Critical thinking of social, political aspects get a bit lost. But of course, I see changings, and probably that's the reason you are doing this forum here, right? It's just to make us rethink this these formats, you know, these patterns that we keep perpetuating, sometimes not even knowing why. And things like, hierarchy, still using formats of ballet, still dancing for the king in an Italian stage. when at the very moment, what we all need, especially I think students, youngsters, or oldies, we need a space just to be, right? Just to be less judged, to be less controlled as well. Otherwise, every activity is covered in competition and performance pressure. So, I don't know. As you know, dance could happen anywhere, right? In any room, literally. And this kind of dance that we, especially a contemporary dance, transmit, it wants to free the body in all its potentials, right? We don't want to discipline bodies as in a social political way, but to free its potential, to find out and to evolve in a way, if I may use this word. But there's a lot of this potential of the body that's being commoditized, over-commercialized. And many of the initiatives that we create, like we as in contemporary dancers and facilitators or whatever the name is, like, you know, dancing in the rooftops, dancing everywhere, dancing in the streets, bringing dance like you do, like to people with, I heard, with chronic diseases, all this, like the amplification of its potential gets flattened now by over commercialization of our ideas, right? And so I think we need to better understand the use, the incredible potential of dance to promote learning, to promote, as we know, cultural integration, and to reduce stress, which is killing us bit by bit. The real stage, another point I wanted to mention, the real stage is anyway getting less environmental friendly. You know, with all the energy that they use, the black, the dark room. So there's a lot of pollution in creating these things as well. Sorry, Paolo. Yeah, just to summarize, my reflection is that education could relate deep, more profoundly to dance if it goes back to dancing for the sake of dancing. And, no need to show it off all the time, right?
Yeah. No, it's perfect. I mean, you don't have to excuse yourself. And I find also this, you're answering with almost an open question or a wish is one of the answer I loved. And of course, you touch a very sensitive point for me. Since I'm father, I have a young daughter, so I questioning how is the system of education? Why is like it is, and it's very old. And also, you touch. I'm also very happy because of the podcast, because you touch a point that was not pointed until now. So clearly, that is this goal, this achieving goals. And competition to performing. And it's true, that is why the project also in the school, or unfortunately, to be supported, they need to have a performance. So you need to produce, right? You need to produce something. So the idea of production is on the top of the, and actually education, and I think it's not that far from the normal, the basic education, let's say, the known education for mathematics, that we always have to produce result. I know I'm talking about maybe like you know exactly, we talk about a very utopic society, but why not? A society where we learn for the sake of learning. And I mean, neuroscience show us that the brain is there to learning. The only work that brain is able to do in is learning, whatever, in whatever ways. So why not learn it because the brain needs it, not for producing something?
Right. And because dancing will help learning other disciplines as well, right?
Absolutely.
A break between mathematics and physics will help out to understand this.
Absolutely. And dancing is also physics and mathematics, right? And philosophy.
Yeah, right.
Great. So I know,
very, very critical, but it's just a point I've been, it's been maturing in my head, that's all.
Absolutely. I sustain all your answer. So I will jump to my second answer, and I will let you maybe deeper in some specific. So, dearest Gilda, we have known each other since quite a long time, first of all, and you have always been a very eclectic and curious artist, and your work has always been interdisciplinary, including music, theater, dance, and media, as we also said in your biography. One of your latest research work, We Are the Bots, deal with digitalization and artificial intelligence in art. And it is from this research that I would like you to give us your thoughts and opinion on how bots, and you will also explain us what they are, can influence our perception of body and the way we express ourselves with it. And also, in your opinion, which place should they have in education, in dance education? Pardon.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be a big answer. A long answer. And at least threefolded, right? About my multidisciplinarity, which I call it that, I must say I don't even see really a separation. Just to say, I don't really see a separation. It's all the same. But I am a little bit of an anti-establishment person myself, so I like sometimes to go more to one. When dance go on my nerves, I go more to music. When music gets on my nerves, yeah, it's nice to have the possibility. But yes, dance remains my main discipline, as you know. So diving into the research, We Are the Bots. Difficult to shorten up some things here. So we are the bots. You're going to understand a little bit, but I have to give some definitions to start with, right? So what I meant by bots is mainly. Algorithms and artificial intelligence, and you, as you said, and bots is an umbrella word also to other things that will come. The research main question was how to deal with algorithms and artificial intelligence in order to make us reflect how we are dealing with digital technology. But I have to probably, so I get consistency in my answer, I'm going to probably have to really read some bits of the research, okay? By the way, the research had several collaborators, including, among others, the German neurophysiologist, Wolf Singer. This was like a privilege to have him participating in this research as well. But to start answering, so like, what are algorithms? Just shortly, we know YouTube algorithms works for recommending or advertising videos depending of what we search, online, right? So we know this, but the official definition of algorithms by several academic sources is a term for a computer code, a set of instructions for software, which nowadays is mainly used for, or we have contact through social media. So algorithms is a preset, a coded recipe that is executed when it encounters a trigger. So if I choose to search for dance videos in YouTube, more dance videos are going to be offered. I think everybody nowadays understands this conception. And artificial intelligence is a much more complex definition, right? I'm still trying myself to understand it. It covers a very large variety of specializations and subdivisions. The main we know is machine learning and deep learning. But what is mostly identified as intelligence is actually a group of algorithms that can write code. So basically, artificial intelligence is codes that write new codes. So algorithms that write new algorithms. So it's a group, it's a collective. It learns from its last responses or takes. Let me just start and get lost. So this is described as intelligence and as autonomous capabilities of the machines, right? But some experts refer to it rather as a very complex high automatization of machines instead of intelligence. One use of machine learning and deep learning is now language recognition software that we all use daily or sometimes in our smartphones, right? So they can translate language through, you know, the different information that was gathered in the collective of information in big data collection. So artificial, yes, it's definitely artificial because it's non-human. But if it's intelligence, it's questionable. And many authors, one included, I'm going to refer to him by name, is the German Korean philosopher Byung-Chul Han. He argues that the term is misleading because AI does not think. And a very simple example he gives, which I find it beautiful, is that AI does not get goosebumps. So they are missing the effect, the affective dimension of intelligence, right? AI works with predefined facts. That's what AI nowadays do. Facts that were collected but remain the same. So if big data, as in a collection of what is being daily gathered in this ridiculous, immense library of ourselves and our search online, is a method of gaining knowledge, but not necessarily intelligence. And Byung-Chul Han defines also, because to understand it, AI, artificial intelligence, can recognize past patterns, right? But does not comprehend any result it calculates. Then it comes, we come back to Italian as usual in Latin, interleggere, right? It actually means, in Italian and Latin, it means choose between options. So AI will choose between given options, but human thinking include non-exploited options, where comes creativity, right? So you choose between, in AI, is choosing between given options, and as in human intelligence, or what we understand really as intelligence, we have other options. We have none yet exploited options. The reason why I'm defining this is just to explain a little bit where we're going. I'm sorry if I cannot make it short. What is important to say here was important for me, what was important in the research, is to really know that human thinking is more than just problem solving, right? So you have artificial intelligence now being used also in plantation to define how much water is going to be given depending on how much it rain, how much the temperature, if something evaporated or not. So you have beautiful use of it, but it's again not a conclusion. It's not. It's actually just repeating and deciding through patterns that already existed. And the dangers of it is that the human thinking also becomes more machine too much in dance as well and art. Byung Chul Han says in this book it's called Un Dinge, I don't know the name in English. Every thinker says goodbye to what once was. We as teacher, we also sometimes like, what the heck I did before? Do we keep the book, right?
Like,
and we need to have the courage to sometimes admit that there was like not the best decision. And he says, I find it very interesting, AI is too intelligent, I'm giving quote marks here in the video, to make itself as an idiot, to make itself an idiot. Every thinker and philosophers we know, we at some point they were able to make themselves as an idiot, name it. Everything I know is that I know nothing. And, you know, all the fighting for knowledge. But at the end of the day, there's all we are. I know I am an idiot. I'm a clown. I mean, I just, you know, try to sometimes I get caught in my own trying to research deeper, and I find I'm not that intelligent, but I am intelligent enough to recognize that, you know, I don't have this knowledge, and that's what is a big difference. So but maybe very soon they're going to be able, yeah. And to go on with the question you posed. So another key points of the research were like internet ethics, to for us as artists to know which tools we're using in a daily basis. If we're supporting monopoles, you know, like social media, if we're supporting, what are we endorsing, basically? What are we endorsing? Another point was sustainability. Digital is electro waste. Digital waste is becoming a huge problem that we all have to face. Name it, hardware, software, streaming. Streaming is energy. A major consumer. So, and the third point, which goes to the questions you posed, was the body, right? The body online. You also asked me to explain how algorithms and AI can influence our perception, right, of the body and the way we express ourselves with it. Again, very complex, but I'm gonna give some facts to start with. Facts we know. The human body have already several extensions, right? We have prostheses using object interfaces, which we're using right now, a computer, a smartphone, name it. And these are already intrinsically wired to our body. In digital academic terminology, our body is called meatware, literally. We are meatware to be connected to hardware and software. So it's already happening. It's already influencing our perception of the body. We are already the bots. We are already hybrids. We are already cyborging, if you allow me the new word. Facts that we know also here. Also, I put in my list. In February 2020, the University of Southampton announced the development of successful link between brain neurons and artificial neurons to enable communication online, to interface online. This very week, Elon Musk announced tests with his Neuralink devices, which are supposed to come in 2023. So yes, it's already happened. It's already influenced the perception of the body and the way we express ourselves. These devices are extended memory, right? Sometimes we know, I have this in my cell phone, so I don't need to remember. It's already an extra somatic thing out of my ghost, out of my body. So the main example also is nano-electronic devices, gadgets, the wearables, which are a booming industry right now. You have gadgets that are used in the skin, right? So like Apple Watches is the mainstream example of it, or this Fitbit, virtual reality, augmented reality. They change how they change our vision, our audition. So although these products are promising a better connected lifestyle, we all know it's actually just commercialization, right? The better self, the optimized body, the optimized blah blah blah. It's just end up being products, and yeah, it's already. For me, it's very important to mention this because yeah, many artists are already endorsing this product, because the project with using digitalization in this. So do a project with 3D, do a project with augmented reality, do a project, is this like given tasks? All beautiful and yes, but to know really what products are we endorsing and for what? It's part of the reflection that is being, for me, in my view, is missing. So experimenting versus endorsing projects and products. There's a thin line there. The another change you said, it concerns you as well. Today, this is a quote by Tactical Tech, which is an NGO in Berlin. Today, by the age of 11, 90% of children in Europe and the US have a smartphone. 50% of children as young as 7 have a personal device. And time slots that were actually before used to eat, dance, chat, are being mixed more and more up with these devices, now that's with the action in these devices. I'm criticizing myself. I myself have sometimes 3 devices around me. And I don't even dislike it. I'm not trying to say here, but you think critically about it, right? So it's good or bad or beyond. To bring someone I love, Italian philosopher that maybe you're acquainted with, is called Franco Berardi, Bifo il Bifo. He says, he's mainly critical to this, is that these interactions are distracting us from life, exhausting our mental resources. And he compares like the planet is being exhausted of its resources. Our mental resources are also being, collectively exploited. Because at the end of the day, smartphones and smartwatches are surveillance devices. You know, we've been monitored. They protocol our psychological behavior. They protocol our sense motoric, you know, heart rate and this and that. And God, they are changing our posture because, you know, we have now in the text neck, no? The tech neck. We're all becoming Nosferatu.
True.
Right? It's like you see sometimes kids like, oh my God. Yeah. So when you ask me what place should AI, should digital technologies have in dance education, I'm sorry, but as far as I can perceive, I'm not afraid to be dystopian right now. I see a diseducation process right now. In the opinion of many theory, academic, media theorists, I'm sorry, online games are going to take over the art industry, if I can call it so, I don't know. Well, the thing is that this, you know, you can visit this NGO site, Tactical Tech, for example. They have brilliant programs to detox, to make children and youngsters and people learn how to make the best out of this device. And especially to know, to make the kids know, it's not their fault. They are 24 with the device. Not their fault. They are designed to keep you on with the next notification, with the next. But if you change, of course, the settings, if you change the default settings, you can use, you know, it's not going to be a bad thing. But they are designed to keep people engaging all the time, engaged to advertise shit all the time, right? Yeah. I mean, the thing is that when you ask, there's a main cultural changing through the digital networks is happening, a cultural change, right? There's an example of another media theorist. His name is Ronaldo Lemos, a media theorist from Brazil, and he says that right now, if you see, for example, in an Instagram post, if it's a Marc Chagall painting, or your last selfie, that it doesn't matter for cultural history anymore. It's the manipulation, the tool, the filter, the likes, this immediate emotion, or like whatever. That's what matters, and cultural history loses meaning. Because every app now, and I was impressed myself, every month, worldly, we have more than 100,000 apps coming to the market. It's like we've been attacked, right? We've been attacked with very efficient psychological design to make us get addicted. So all these apps are like sandbox. They work in the principle of sandbox. You can put something that's, you know, whatever here, painting from whoever, you don't even know the name, you can connect to this, but you can immediately erase also. So it's just nothing lingers on. Liquid times, nothing stays in our memory anymore. I'm not just criticizing this, it's just factual, yeah? It's just facts, right? I'm not even criticizing, it's what happened. Our generation, we still know the films we most love, the music that made up. But yeah, so this is just changing, and it's tiring to be a teacher right now and working with arts, because somehow, that's not the question. But right now,
it's more needed, exactly. but also more needed.
More needed,
never,
yes.
Than ever.
but you see, unfortunately, yes, needed definitely. And you see institutions fighting to survive because there's less interest. Also post-corona, no? to the live encounter. But yeah, I myself can tell you, give my example. I am like you. I'm degrowth phase. I'm having less online, you know, less social media, just diminishing also my pollution of the virtual world. And I'm not saying, because I, you know, it's a great thing to do. No, it's just because I cannot deal with it. It's just going insane. It makes me over anxious, over critical, over judgmental, and I don't want to become this person. So I'm degrowthing, which I'm not saying is the thing to do, but my artistic production, yeah, I'm definitely going. There's no going back to the past. So I'm not saying I'm going back to the past, but I'm going smaller. I'm going more analog. And because I'm older, I'm also going slower. So I don't know. Yeah, that's it. I hope I answer somehow. Let's move on, right?
I would add that that's exactly what you said. It's beautiful. As you say, I would just maybe adding this more, but is it flatting and extremize emotion, but mostly flatting emotion. I see how people lose interest in things in a second. So everything gets flattened, the same as you said, Chagall or whatever, doesn't matter, and come one after the other. And then we go on this apathy feeling where emotion are disappearing. And as one of the my interview, Deborah Weaver said, emotion are anyway the essence of the human being, but they are essence of art too, especially. So yeah. Art without emotion is a nonsense. Yeah. So cool. But now you decided. So now we go. I propose you the last question. I'm curious. So, and how do you think education of the body should be in the future?
I don't dare say how. It's too big, but I'm going to a near future, or almost present, almost things that are happening already. I don't know how it should be, but I think things are moving undeniably towards online digitalization of it all. And so a good example I have here is here in Germany. For example, you have the health apps, you know, like supported by the health insurance. They give you Pilates, they give you yoga, they give dance, they give everything. So they are rather putting patients with injuries to use a freaking app than actually give subvention for, you know, people that work high specialized in bodies. So this is, yeah, this is happening. And I'm like, God, it makes me furious to know that I get email from, you know, from a health insurance, from Bama, offering me an app because, you know, they know I have some problems with my back. So this is, and then you have like another example of this endless library of physical exercise filmed, and you have the gigantic Apple Fitness, for example. Apple Fitness also have dance class. I don't know what, because I don't have the app, but they have like, it's just the ginormous monopolization. They CrossFit, you can do this dance, and then they send you the music from their app store, and then you can have the Apple Watch to monitor. So it's just it's happening, and it's gigantic, right? So this educational features and education tools are already being used to promote dance, whatever it means. Again, like you said, flattening the plurality of our work, right? These online offers are cheaper. They are more flexible, quote marks here, because you can do it with your colleague, you can do in your bathroom. You know, and they are precise because artificial intelligence is behind it. So they're being highly supported by also our policymakers, our government here in Germany. So, and people that never danced before, they're not going to miss it. They never took a Paolo Fossa class. They're not going to miss it. They don't know how good their embodied experience could be. They're just going to, you know, copy the freaking display. I told you I'm a clown. But I
would add, because I wasn't sure if I was understanding, so I was almost wishing that you were talking about app suggesting to go to someone to take a class, but no, it's even worse. It proposes a video of someone. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry,
precise, because maybe somebody like me was not clever enough to understand how worse is it.
No, the ones that are being supported by the health insurance here, no, they are 100% bots. 100%. It's scary. I also agree with you. If they would, you know, suggest someone to take an online class, it's not all bad. And if I'm sorry if I'm just going to the critical point, but it's just because I'm trying to shorten my answer, and I go for the juggler. it could be great, and someone cannot leave their place. There are advantages also in this remote learning, please. Yeah, many. But mainly, no, the ones supported by the health insurance are, yeah, fully algorithms managed. So many of these people then, in my opinion, are moving towards online training, right? And virtual reality. There's also already dance classing using virtual reality. Salsa dancing, you don't have a partner, you put your Oculus, and you're going to imagine you're going to dance with a partner. Also already happening. And but then again, we don't know. Maybe the next generation, you know, maybe they're going to have some amazing cervical spine able to hold their head bending forward. It's going to invert, the lumbar is going to the, you know, it's going to be the cervical spine, I don't know. Because they already have different skills, right? They're already very dexterous with their fingers. I take half an hour to send an SMS and I see them just amazing with the touch screen. So I don't know, but I personally wish, or taking the trying to mix up the analog way with the online, and not trying to just, you know, one erasing the other. So I don't know, but I see in the future more autodidacted dancers. I see less importance in what we do, unfortunately. I must say that's my pessimist. This knowledge transmission is getting less important, according to my view. So education could be moving more towards really this sensorial, multidisciplinary, with the Oculus, with the gloves, with games, this immediate experience that, you know, games evoke, like fear, anxiety. Maybe the next generation is going to be more anxiety resilient. I'm not. I don't know.
But then in this word, and I find also your answer great, we will have to deal with ethic, because machine has no ethic.
If they are learning from us, we have a problem. Yeah. I think the main problem, Paul, if I may, is really climate change, right? We need to be resource aware, and go small in art is often criticized because it doesn't bring you fame, right? But to go back to, you know, this analog to teaching, to facilitating, or however the name is, smaller groups. You know, it's becoming more and more important to me right now, I must say. I think in future, dance, as we know, will be either practiced in caves, and we're going to be back to caves, or it's going to be implanted by sensors in a very far away. There are some forums very concerned with future education. One of them is part of the group, which is called now GANM, which is one of the five, you know, is the group of the five big techs: Google, Apple, Meta, Amazon, and Microsoft. So Google has already a forum for how education is going to be in the future. And it's a mega project in 100 millions of countries and 100 millions of specialists. But I'm afraid the result of it would be to commercialize education even more and to centralize education. There's one last thing I put here from Byul Shun Han. In his opinion, the man of the future plays, and he is calling this in a later book the phono sapiens, which is the man that experiences everything in his cell phone as a playground. And that's the phono sapiens doesn't need reality anymore. It doesn't need materiality of things. It can be all here evoked through brain procedures, and that we, yeah, and it's kind of dangerous that we also move towards this kind of thinking. You know, choosing between just pre-given options like A or B in a binary terrorism. Yeah, it's like you said also, people are not impressed by things anymore. The videos are shorter. It's just like, hey, it's too much. And we need some silence. It's everything too loud, right?
I will keep this word as.
I'm sorry. It's complex, right?
No, not because I want to cut you, but because I love it. I love this. I believe also. And actually, Corona was offer a possibility to have a bit of silence in the sense of, because people stopped to run because many people couldn't work and couldn't. Then, of course, it transformed very fast in working from home. That means unlimited working. But we don't go this. But I heard from many people that Corona, at least this last pandemic, was in the beginning, very beginning, when everybody was surprised and not ready, a chance to be with the people close to them and be quiet and having time and silence.
That is true.
On the street there was silence, more silence, and the mind was silented for a while because we couldn't run anymore like we were used to. Then we find, of course, we find another way to speed it up. But that's why I would say I would love to end this beautiful interview. And I love it.
Ah, thank you, Paolo. Thank
with,
you.
With your word of silence.
Yeah.
We need silence for the future.
Not only,
of course. The rest we have it already.
Yeah, exactly.
So, dear Gilda, thank you very much for your contribution. I hope your words and sharing of your experience and path inspire our listeners. And may this short conversation result in a new connection for a free and productive exchange of knowledge. And of course, may this contribute, I'm very sure about this, to new discussions that enrich and improve the education system of dance and through dance.
Paolo, thank you very, very much. Muito obrigada. Mille grazie. And yes, thanks for inspiring a lot of people with this project. And it's so easy to criticize, but it's so hard to take initiative. So I applaud you. I applaud all the colleagues here.
Thank you because you are doing the podcast, you and all my guests. And yes, great. Thank you.
All right.
Das Forschungsprojekt würde durch das Förderprogramm Distanzen finanziert. Distanzen ist Teil des Hilfsprogramms Tanz, das im Rahmen von Neue Start Kultur, eine Initiative der Beauftragten der Bundesregierung für Kultur und Medien, gefördert ist.